there's nothing funnier. Somebody I'm longing to see. I'll hope that he turns out to be in the entire 12-month calendar year. Join us, won't you, for a laugh. It is August, as you know, and it is a time for laughter. Here we go. Open your eyes. Put your mouth into a smile. It's time. August is here. August. You're finally here. Hilarious. Music.
Pictures podcast, where we're going to talk about every movie. That's right, every movie released by New World Pictures. I'm Ryan. With me, as always, is Mark. Mailed. And Erica.
When I get hungry, I just chew the insides of my mouth.
And welcome to Ha Ha August 3, Rule of Threes. Threes. Well, we're going to talk about all the comedies.
Comedies released
by New World Pictures. Sometimes they all feel like comedies and sometimes they won't. I don't know. That's the magic of New World. But joining us for this first episode of Ha Ha August 3, we have a returning guest. He has been on a variety of episodes. There is no rhyme or reason when Dirk shows up, but there is a reason for this particular appearance. He's joined us for so many movies like The Great Land of Smaul and Zombie Nightmare.
Snow Dog, Snow Dead Dog, Avalanche Dead Dog, Snow Kids.
the dog who stopped the war. That's right.
And yes. Then died.
Yes.
God, I just realized I am that therapist that can't think of the words. I'm her. Oh, man.
That's right, everybody. He's the host of VHS. Dirk Marshall, welcome back to the show.
Woo! Woo! This crowd's raising the roof for Dirk. Woo! They're raising the roof. Shit! Uh-oh!
Donkey! I'm so excited to be here to talk about Shrek Donkey. Donkey, get in my belly, donkey.
That's what we're talking about, right?
No, we're not talking about Shrek.
No, we're not talking about Shrek.
We're not talking about Shrek.
I printed this mask off and everything.
Oh. I'm so sorry. I colored it? Maybe my email was
specific. You did a great job. It's
so
really
sorry.
Good.
You did a great job with the really Shrek nice. Mask. But no, we're not talking about Shrek. It's
All right. Well, some of my notes are going to be a little weird then.
Well, no, but what we are going to talk about is we're going to talk about 1987's Beyond Therapy.
Let's examine mental illness, shall we?
I hate therapy.
But you wanted it, darling.
How could I have wanted it when one of our topics is I don't know what I want?
She needs help.
You're right on time.
Yeah, I like being prompt.
You have lovely breath.
I took the subway, the express.
Is this the degenerate you told me about?
What'd she tell you about me? You were in contact like this?
I like the timbre of your voice. It's soft but firm.
Just like your breast.
He should be committed.
Yes, they're soft, extended wear.
I know a woman who has sex every day of her life with a perfect stranger.
That is the beginning of mental health.
She's a shrink.
You have problems. problems with premature ejaculation.
There is nothing premature about it. Our society is patient quickly. We all got a lot of things to do. I ejaculate quickly on purpose.
He's a shrink, too. As for this young gentleman...
Toys, dolls, were you allowed dolls?
Yes.
He's a confirmed bachelor.
It's nuclear weapons I wasn't allowed to play with.
Very Ooh. Confirmed.
It's quite attractive.
Yes, they're all a bit confused. There's only one hope, one cure for their extreme mental disorder.
Maybe I'll kill myself.
A meaningful relationship. And of course, that's beyond therapy. The ultimate treatment for incurable romantics.
Will you marry me?
Yes.
Julie Haggerty.
I've got a throw off.
Jeff Goldblum.
I'm deeply emotional.
Glenda Jackson.
Twice a day.
Tom Conti.
Was I no gray?
And Christopher Guest.
I broke a vase.
I suppose he took his time. Yes?
Made oh, yes. to make you laugh like mad.
People wanting sex to take a long time is sick.
Beyond Therapy, a film by Robert Altman.
That's right, 1987's Beyond Therapy, brought to you by Behind the Scenes Restaurant Drama. There's nothing quite like working at a restaurant. You truly become family, a family with benefits, such as group therapy, free food, friendship, and also lots of sex. Mm-hmm. But be warned, if you truly want to know about the drama that goes on behind the scenes at a restaurant, be aware it is mostly in French and it won't be subtitled, and you may not know what the actual fuck is actually happening.
Mm-hmm. That's true. That's true.
Oh, I'm glad I wasn't alone there.
Oh,
I was
boy.
Like, I feel like I'm missing part of the story.
Why
here.
Do we care about this restaurant? Who gives a shit about this restaurant? We're not here for the restaurant. Anyway.
Yeah. Ryan, it seems like you have a lot of issues with restaurants. Please explain. You want to talk about that? Do you want to explore that,
I don't. This movie is directed by Robert Altman. He's the director of movies like Nashville, MASH, and this. Altman spent a good part of the 80s turning plays into movies. This actually caps off a string of five straight play adaptations. He start with, and also he did a TV movie in the middle. That was a play adaptation too, as well. 1985's Laundromat. But he started in 1982 with Come Back to the Five and Dime, Jimmy Dean, Jimmy Dean. Then he did Streamers. And then he did Secret Honor. And then he did Fool for Love, actually released by Cannon Group, right before he does this. Just a bunch of play adaptations. Though, he was supposed to direct a different movie. Altman was supposed to actually direct 1986's Heat, the one that starred Burt Reynolds, but he quit a week before filming in March 1986 because this was apparently his excuse, quote unquote, but U.S. immigration did deny a work permit to his Canadian DP, Pierre Mignon, who does shoot this movie. So he said, forget it, I'm not going to work without Mignon. And then he started shooting this movie 3 months later. So I don't know if this still would have happened regardless of Heat, but he might have directed Heat with Burt Reynolds instead of this. Altman, though, does adapt this from the play by Christopher Durang that came out in the early 1980s. It was on Broadway with John Lithgow and Diane Wiest, and the Jeff Goldblum and Julie Haggerty parts.
I know we're not at final questions, but I would love to see that production. Right?
It'd be so different.
It'd be
so
different.
I think you meant to word that as a question, but I do agree. I do agree.
Oh, I know we're not at final questions, but I would love to see that production. Oh,
production?
Man.
You didn't ask the question.
That would be so good.
I know we're also not at final questions, but am I the only one on this podcast that really wants to like Burt Reynolds' Heat? Oh, like, you don't I really like it? Want no, I like it, but it should have been so much better. I feel it has the potential to be one of his best movies.
It should have been one of his absolute best. And there was several directors. Altman was just the first. They had to replace him with somebody else. They went through several different directors, one of which Burt Reynolds hated so much he punched him in the face.
Wow.
And then he had to pay him $500,000.
Wow. As a this result is still of the one that you're going to tie his best movie to? You want to stick with that after learning that fact? You want to stay... That's still your
I'm
answer.
Saying it should have been one of his best movies. It has all it the been. Parts and pieces of being one of the best movies
wonder
he made.
What could have stopped it? Seems like he wasn't a problematic guy.
Well, we'll from know. What I understand, the studio got in the way and messed it all up.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, guys, there you go about 1986's Heat. But back to 1987's Beyond Therapy, which Robert Altman saw this play as an opportunity that he could take a piece of material and turn it into a contemporary French farce, which, boy, did he, I guess. Christopher Durang, however, didn't particularly care for this adaptation of his work. He said this on his website. He said,
uh-oh.
Altman wrote his own adaptation of the play before I even started to write mine, which certainly wasn't the agreement. Then I wrote mine, which he pretty much ignored, and he was hurt that I didn't like his version. Eventually, I requested that we have a shared credit, since his version still had chunks of the original play in it, and I secretly hoped that the actors would improvise a lot, as was known to happen in Altman films. However, the finished film is pretty close to what Altman wrote. His version, in my opinion, throws the psychological underpinnings out the window, and people just run around acting crazy.
You know what Christopher Durang should have done? Punched Robert Altman in the face, Burt Reynolds style, and got in his way. He probably had $5,000 to just do it, you know?
That was $500,000.
Oh, $500,000.
$500,000, not Ooh, 5,000. Yeah, $500,000.
That's an expensive bunch.
1986 money, for sure.
I know we're not talking about other movies except for maybe Heat, but John Lithgow was also really good in animated voice work.
Derek, you're an all-star.
Just want to say.
Get your game on. Go play.
The amount of movies we might talk about besides Beyond Therapy, it's going to be massive. Now, Derek, I said we had a special reason for bringing you on, and that is because this is a five-starred review movie for you on Letterboxd.
Five stars?
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
The full five.
So, can you tell us?
Did I write a review?
You did not.
Okay, cool.
You did not. So, it left me wondering.
Yes.
Why Beyond
Let's
Therapy?
Get into it. Okay. Yeah. So, it's interesting because watching it now was like watching it for the first time with the idea that someone else had seen this movie. And knowing that I was going to talk to you, I could see like both sides of the mirror, so to speak. So, I grew up watching a lot of this period of Goldblum stuff in my dad's video store, and I love his performances and the way that he like finds words in the air with his hands and, you know, all of the little Jeff Goldblum-isms. And they are in this bizarre French sex comedy, I guess. And to add another layer to it, the first play I ever got paid to be in fact, I think it's the only time I got paid to act in a play, was this play. And
what?
I was the Jeff Goldblum character.
What?
And I later on took parts of this script and just cut out her lines and would use it as monologues when I had an audition for roles.
Stop it.
So,
what?
Yeah, so Beyond Therapy as a play is like kind of in my bones, so to speak. And so the movie, when I watch it, I can enjoy parts of it that are from the play, and I kind of just, my brain just sort of pushes the Altman stuff to the side, because what he really does is he butchers the comedy in the actual play, and he even cuts out some of the funniest lines. You know, and you know, in theater and stuff, there's like an ebb and flow to the banter of these two weird characters that they put together. And it just is so herky jerky in this movie, the way it's cutting in between. And I get what he's doing, because he's like, it's a movie. We can't just always be in this restaurant. But like, it really kind of cuts the comedy and kind of flattens it into a weird thing that then has way too loud of music on top.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So loud.
I know we're not at final questions, but Dirk.
Yeah.
Do you have that monologue prepared?
Oh, my wife said the same thing when I was telling her this, and no, I don't. But
damn it.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. All right. All right.
We can stop and give
you
some
time. Yeah, we can wait. We can just pause.
That. Yeah.
Let you go work on it real quick and come back.
I looked it up. Somebody
just come
scanned.
Just go out of the room for a minute and just look at
I could.
Prepare.
Reset.
Right.
Yeah. Come back in. Had the moment before. do it as Shrek.
I'm glad you're... My Shrek sounds like a vampire, but... anyway.
I was going to say something.
Yeah, it's not good. I tried to do a Jeff Goldblum in preparation for this, but it came out more Jason Bateman-y, and it was just confusing to me, and I was the one doing it, so I decided not to do that as well.
Well, I will dip into this, but I, too... Dirk did a little
Oh my god, look, he's got it flagged.
I've got the play right here. I did a scene from this in an acting class in college. I did a scene between Bob and Charlotte, Bob and the therapist, and I played Bob. And I will never remember it. I will never forget it, I should say, because boy, I switched it on you. Yeah. I will never forget it because I did the scene with my friend Anastasia Nemec, who's the sister of Corin Nemec.
Oh yeah.
And Parker Lewis, can't lose. And so we worked on this scene so much, and then class got canceled for that week, so we actually had to come in on finals week. And I'll never forget because our teacher, we were the last scene to go. So we've worked on this thing for so long. And the drama teacher, who I won't name because she's no longer with us, but she was sitting in the front row. She got on the edge of her seat. She put her arm through the straps of the purse and she got her keys out and they were in her hand and she was like, go. and we did the scene and we finished and she was like, great. Anybody have anything to say? No? All right. Great class, everyone. And got up and left.
What a legend.
We worked so hard on this scene.
So
and
good.
She
what a legend.
Could not have cared less.
Oh, my God. Ryan, I know we're not at final questions, but do you have that scene prepared?
Yeah, I'll be the therapist.
Let me call up Anastasia. Let me see if she's gonna if she's available.
Shit. Well, I guess this is a time to reveal that Mark and I have prepared a scene from Beyond Therapy. We're the only two that came prepared. And
hold on, let me cue up the music.
Thank you.
I do like the idea that you add a new section to the podcast where it's like, now we're going to redo one of the scenes from the movie.
Ooh.
Oh, we have read through parts of scripts before. We did that Escape 2000, a.k.a. Turkey Shoot. So
good thing we already recorded Cries and Whispers.
Before we dive in, here's where you can watch Beyond Therapy. It is on Shout TV. It is on Plex. And also... it is on this Blu-ray right here.
Which we are raffling off tonight. So whoever has
Scorpion
a scene prepared.
Just real quick, because
monologue will be rewarded with this.
It's a monologue off.
Yeah.
This Blu-ray is out of print, and I just looked it up on eBay because I was like, oh, I wonder what it's going for. It's not expensive. You can get this very easily. Mm-hmm. It is not hard to get a hold of. So if you want to get a hold of this Blu-ray, which has absolutely no special features, it is available to you on eBay.
Hold on. You're not selling this enough. On this Blu-ray, not only are you getting a remastered version of Beyond Therapy, you are getting 7 different New World Pictures trailers. Of course, you'll get the trailer for Beyond Therapy, which makes sense. But you're also going to get Delivery Boys, Fraternity Vacation, Pretty Smart, Shadow Play, Talking Walls, and an NWPP VIP favorite, The Killing Time.
Ooh. Yeah, all the ones released by Scorpion/Kino, all distributed through there.
This can be yours. So
yeah.
Get your
Let's
monologues
hear those
ready,
monologues,
everybody.
Folks. Get them ready.
Get your
and there is
prepared.
A casting couch. I know I probably shouldn't have to say it, but there's a casting couch. It exists. So just know that. So anybody who's auditioning for the part of Charlie, wink, audio wink.
Yeah. And this
get those titties
age,
ready.
In this day and age, that goes for
the
you
sound
men
bite
too.
Is not going to age
you.
Well.
It's not. No.
Yeah, no matter what time on. It is that you do that monologue, it will be 20 minutes after the hour.
Uh-oh. Someone paid attention.
All right, let's talk about what this movie is about. Mark, what is
no!
Beyond Therapy about?
Nothing. It's really about nothing. I mean, it's about people. It's not about... animals. I guess people are animals, but it's about people. But I guess it's a cautionary tale to never watch Sunday Bloody Sunday. Or maybe it's an encouraging tale to watch Sunday Bloody Sunday. I don't know. I'm going to stick with my original verdict. It's about nothing.
Sunday Bloody Sunday, isn't that a movie that stars Glenda Jackson, who's in this movie?
I don't think that they mentioned that when Christopher Guest's character is talking about Sunday Bloody Sunday.
Yeah.
I don't think he calls that out specifically.
Glenda Jackson, who plays Charlotte in this movie, was in Sunday Bloody Sunday. Anyway, Dirk, what is Beyond Therapy about?
You should always have a little sugar after you have meat.
Yeah. Yeah. Not really the plot of a movie, but good advice.
But yes. Like good, yeah.
Good, solid advice.
You should be able to walk away from any movie with at least something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know? And if this movie offers anything, it's just that. And that's about it.
Yeah.
I do have two others. I also wrote down that it's about never eating at a French restaurant. And that not all people should wear bold patterns. So I had three options.
Yeah. All three count. All three count.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, they all count. Yeah. Erica, what is Beyond Therapy about?
God, I wonder if I'm a person who should wear bold patterns or not. Oh, we may never know. For me, I think Beyond Therapy was about really how creative you can get with a studio apartment. You can have,
yes.
You know, if you have a sunken living room, it doesn't always need to be the living room. It could also be a bedroom, just what some paper sliding doors can do. Think about having your kitchen above you. I don't know.
Yeah.
Think about it. It was really kind of a lesson in creativity about studio apartments.
Yeah, I agree.
And be careful when you select your roommates. Gosh, don't fall in love, I guess.
True.
If I can offer something else, personal ads are dangerous.
Ooh. Go on. You know? Okay.
Buyer beware. Listening. I'm just saying, you do not know what you're going to get. I don't.
Yeah. I know we're not a fun of questions, but Ryan, have you ever put a personal ad out there?
No. No, I haven't. No, I haven't. And that's
doesn't have to be recent. I mean,
I understand.
Not fishing.
I thought you meant like ever, like in my life.
Ever,
no,
yeah, in your
no,
life.
I have not.
Not even a Craigslist missed connection.
Mm-mm.
Nothing?
Nope. Never happened. Never happened.
All right. Mark?
I made
Dirk?
All the connections. There weren't many connections to make. No.
Made all the necessary connections. Have any of you guys put out a personal ad?
No, but there's a section in like a local paper that would have like the I saw you section where it's like you person in green shoes at the corner of whatever, and I always wanted to be one of those people, but I never was. But every week, like in my 20s, I would get the paper and flip to it and be like, oh no, no one saw me. And then I would just cry.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah,
I like that. Just like I saw you, not like I'm trying to get in contact with you, but I saw you. Yeah. Oh, I like that. Should we bring that back?
We should. Let's see people.
We should. Yeah, let's use this podcast to see
our two
people.
Podcasts will make this thing happen.
Okay,
we'll
I like
open
it,
up
though.
Personal ads on our.
I like it.
On our website.
I know we're not at final questions, but when you did cry, did you put in eye drops before you cried?
That's the only way I can do it. I don't have tear ducts.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't cry, so that would be the only way I have to do it too.
Yeah.
Dirk had them surgically removed his tear ducts.
Yeah, I was trying to lose weight, and I started with the tear ducts. You start small, and then you build outward from there.
I think you're supposed to shed water weight, not try to hold it in.
Ah, so full of liquids. I'm squishy in pockets all over my body. It's disturbing.
He has to stay ripe for the swamp.
That's right.
True.
Audio.
Hey, Dirk, you're looking a little puffy. Oh, it's just tears. I have a lot of tears.
Yeah.
They're mostly on my face. Some weird
I'm retaining
on my
tears.
Trickle down to my shoulders, my neck.
It's retaining
little,
tears.
It's a lot of tears.
Don't judge. Judge Ryan.
If I watch The English Patient, I get like really puffy.
Oh, man. I've never seen that. Is that a saddie?
I saw it 5 times in the theater as a teenager.
In the theater?
Yeah.
I've never seen a movie 5 times in the theater. Not the same movie. Never.
I know we're not in final questions, but you never will.
Probably not. Yeah.
Also, not a question. But yeah. I think we got to.
Apparently, we're not asking questions in final questions. We're just making declarative statements.
Unless there was like a bottomless dark chocolate raisinette situation I could get into, then maybe
that's the movie. That's the movie. Somebody eating a box of raisinets. And Erica's like, this one's really
like,
good.
Fuck yeah, dark chocolate. Good choice.
I've seen this one 7 times.
Yeah.
Oh my god. By movie number 4, you would have such massive diarrhea that you'd have to contend with.
Diarrhea coming into movie 1. Don't worry about it. I can't live with diarrhea.
That's a lot of raisins.
Mark. That's unrelated to the raisinets.
I eat a lot of dark chocolate raisins, dude. Came in with the squirts. Barely made it through the previews, okay?
All right, let's see what Letterboxd thought this movie was about.
Ooh,
Dirk,
I can't
We know you were on Letterboxd. One of our few guests who actually is on Letterboxd.
That's right. I put all my thoughts and efforts about everything I ever watch on there.
So many people.
5 stars, no comments.
Don't remember leaving anything. Yeah, definitely check me out on Letterboxd. I think it's my name. I don't know either.
I know that I see your posts, and that's why you're here. So there you go. But here's what Letterboxd said. It says, Manhattanites Bruce and Prudence are each looking for a meaningful romantic relationship and have been encouraged by their psychiatrist to find someone through the personal ads. Well, that's... I don't remember that being true. But, in fact, they both seem to reject and... or, not remember the person they're talking to. So I don't think that they were doing much encouraging. But anyway. Their first meeting is disastrous, but they begin to hit it off during their second date. However, Bruce's bisexual. Bruce owns apparently a bisexual. It's not Bruce is bisexual is what they meant, but that's okay. That's all right. That's for the grammar cast. That's for the grammar cast.
Anyway, I'm sorry. The Semantic Cast just fired me.
The Semantic Cast already has a spin-off Grammar Cast?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Holy yeah. It's once a month they do the Grammar Cast. Just to...
They do it once a month?
Well, it's not very popular.
They're so busy with semantics. They can't, you know. Anyway, Bruce's bisexual live... Oh, I see what he's saying. So they're saying Bruce's bisexual live-in lover, though I would say I don't think Bob is bisexual
at all.
Bob
is not bisexual.
Bruce is the one who's bisexual, which is what threw me off by this. Okay. Bruce's bisexual live-in lover does not want to share Bruce and is willing to do whatever it takes to keep him to himself. I don't know.
Whatever it takes is a stretch. That's a stretch.
This is definitely setting up... I don't know how exactly you describe what happens in this movie. This is definitely setting up false expectations. That's for sure.
Well, it's all in the trailer we sat through.
Yeah. Yeah. True. True.
Well, you don't say that in any sort of dismissive way. We just all happen to be sitting. You're not saying that as if it was exhausting to get through just the trailer.
I like the movie, and that trailer is exhausting.
He came in a fan, just like I started the podcast with diarrhea.
Erica's had to go run off to the toilet three times already. It's been intense.
I didn't even have lettuce. I just, you know, it's just within, some people just carry people their gifts with them at all times.
That's right. Well, if you want to know what this movie is about, Robert Altman has his version of what this movie is about. In an article from the LA Times in August of 1986, he said this: the movie is about the oversaturation of therapy, the overconcentration of people worrying about themselves. Thoughts? Mark, you seem perplexed.
Is he talking about the patients or the therapists? Because I would argue that both sides of the spectrum are very much wrapped up in themselves.
Yeah, yeah. Which is definitely what he took from the play.
Or is he talking about the mother?
Which is really funny in the play. It's not as funny in the movie, but in the play, there's like some of the blocking, I feel like, still exists from the actual play. And some of the parts where the therapist moves to be on the couch where the therapier, what do you call that? Patient?
Therapier. Thank you. For using the proper term.
I'm an ally.
You're using your French. How nice.
Yeah, we... That's funny stuff in a play, but in a movie, you don't get that switch of power. It just doesn't, it reads very flat, and it's kind of a bummer because if you were watching a play, you'd be like, oh, now the therapist is on the couch, like how the tides have turned. And then someone probably says, keep it down. This is a play. But, you know, like,
I just wish Ryan and Anastasia could do the scene, and then I would fully understand it. Gosh. I can't wrap my mind around it. Sure, it would be nice to have a visual. Guess we won't. Did you get her on the phone yet? Or
She's not responding to my text. It's very strange.
Man.
Mostly fix it
it's
in
probably because I don't have her number, so that's the biggest problem.
Oh, shoot. Okay.
It's the biggest issue.
We'll put out an ad. Maybe,
yeah, personal ad.
Yeah, there you go. Missed connection. A friend I haven't seen in a while. I do think it is about therapy, but I would say his movie is not often really about therapy. It's
beyond.
It's really more about the restaurant. It goes well beyond therapy, that's for sure. And says, what's going on in this restaurant? I want to know. But this movie does star Jeff Goldblum, Julie Haggerty, and they are going on a date in a French restaurant. Though they shot the movie in France, so you know, maybe we should just call it a restaurant.
Le restaurant.
Goldblum was actually discovered by Robert Altman while he was doing a play in New York.
Le restaurant.
And so he had two of his earliest roles in Altman's
shot this in France? Sorry, I'm just now catching up.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Did you not watch it to the end?
At the end.
Yeah, I don't know what I thought. I guess I thought it was like stock footage or something. I don't know.
Mark, we were legitimately high-fiving each other for having made it through the
film. I was just glad it was over.
Got it. Okay.
I mean, fair.
She was not paying much attention to the credits because we were just so happy we made it to the end. Anyway. Yeah.
It's a high sank in French, I think, is what they call that.
Because we loved it, guys. We loved it. That's why we're high-fiving. We're like, what a terrific film. Anyway, he was discovered by Altman. He had done a play, and then he gets roles in Nashville and California Split. He also, of course, did a very tiny role before that in Death Wish, if you recall. He's one of the guys that sets Charles Bronson off onto a killing spree of his own.
I know we're not talking about other movies, but in Death Wish, to get the role, Jeff Goldblum actually had to sexually assault a chair. That's how he got the role.
That's right. Yeah.
What?
Yeah. Sacre bleu is what I
would
say.
What a weird audition. Look, I won't make you guys do that during your audition, but there will be a casting couch. I can't say it enough times, and I'm not allowed to say it, but there will be, all right? Just be ready.
Just know that going in.
Just be ready.
I'm shocked that HR is okay with this casting couch situation.
Don't
but
say that, or she's going to show up.
Mention it to HR.
We're trying to record this off the record.
We've taken it off the NWPP
this is
server.
Beyond HR.
This is an after hours recording.
You know, the fact that we have HR show up would imply that at NWPP headquarters there are other departments, but so far we've only heard from HR so far. So
well, the other departments are busy at work.
Yeah.
obviously.
True. All right, so where this falls into Jeff Goldblum's career, he shot this after finishing The Fly, and before that, Transylvania 65,000. He does Transylvania 65,000, then The Fly, then this.
Wow. What a wild time he had.
And then Jurassic Park?
And then he waited several years and stopped working for Jurassic Park to come this way. Yeah, that's not 93, Mark. So it took a little bit longer.
Oh, I always do the 1, 2, 3 hop step and then do Jurassic Park.
You're like, what do I remember him from? No, Jurassic Park. That's the movie he did.
He did The Tall Guy and Earth Girls Are Easy. This was a great period of Goldblum.
Vibes,
Mr. Frost. I mean, there's so many great Goldblum movies. Very I would like gem. To. Was Mr.
Were those
Frost
after Jurassic Park?
No.
Oh. All before, Mark.
All before.
Mark just can't remember a time. It's all, for him, Goldblum is all post-Jurassic Park.
Well, to be fair to Mark, Jurassic Park might be the last movie he saw in the theaters, so let's just be fair to him.
It's true.
I did see that one twice in the theaters. So
twice.
I also love that this era of Goldblum, like, he just went to his hairdresser and was just like, "Give me the Kenny G, and let's roll with it through the whole thing."
No way, let's Kenny G had longer hair and was curlier. Don't ask why I know so much about him. Just know that I know that. All right.
Oh, okay.
I want the Kenny G hair and the Don Johnson Miami Vice outfits.
For this movie, moving off though,
yeah,
Haggerty may be best known for Airplane and Lost in America. She had actually played this very part on stage, as she told the Chicago Tribune in 1987. She said, "I had done the play at the Berkshire Theater Festival, and Bob called me from Paris and asked if I would do the film. I said yes, but then a year went by, and I had to start from scratch."
Much shit, like Mark. Dirt. Everybody's done this play but us. Shit.
No, seriously.
Like, only two people haven't starred in this fucking play in some form or another. You know
guys,
what? When I'm ready to interview you for a job,
just the two of you.
When Mark and I are ready to interview for our next jobs, we're going to be like,
Yeah.
Where will I see myself in 5 years? Give me 1 second. Really like your breasts. Stay with me. This is a monologue. Stay with me. Why are you ending the call?
Put your foot in my mouth.
Why are you calling security?
I want you to play Jeff Goldblum's character. Definitely.
Yeah, I will.
Like, that's
Thank
the role
you.
For you.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna. I'll do all Bob scenes. So
yeah.
it'll be vaguely a mix of Bob and Corky St. Clair. It'll be just somewhere in the middle there. That's where I'm gonna take the character.
Mark and Erica perform Beyond Therapy in parts. And by parts, I mean they play two parts, and the other, and if they do intersect and talk to each other, it's great.
Yeah.
But when they don't talk to each other, they're just talking to air.
Yeah. It's really out of the box casting, because we're performing it at different times in characters that we shouldn't be playing.
I like it. I'm going to be the Goldblum character, and then I'll play her character as Shrek.
As like she always meant to be played.
Donkey, I don't like gay people. That's her as played by Shrek.
Yeah. A line from this play. Haggerty was
having that glitters is gold. Only shooting stars break the mold. Does anybody else have that song just running through their head on a loop, or just me?
I've got someone to watch over me. Just stuck in my brain.
Haggerty was having a great time. She told Harry Hahn in December 1986 that she thought the movie was her best work. Wow. And to the LA Times, she said, "I've never had so much fun." And elaborated in her interview with the Chicago Tribune, she said, "It was great working in Paris. We went over a week early. Altman wanted us all to know and get comfortable with each other. At night, Bob would let the whole cast see the dailies. It was the first time in my life I saw every foot I shot. Not that I learned any French from the French actors in the cast, but you do get a company feeling with Bob. Everything was very loose."
Audio wink or no? Is that?
I don't know.
Okay.
I was going to say that I will admit that Julie Haggerty is doing a great job of playing Julie Haggerty. Like,
yeah,
the jump from her role in Airplane to this is it's more like a little step.
It's
not
a side
really
step.
A leap.
Yeah, it's a side step.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah.
Though, in a way, when you think of Diane Wiest playing her part on Broadway, you're like, oh, she is doing a very... And I don't know if she even saw the performance or not, but it's like the energy is very similar. Like, I can definitely see what Diane Wiest would have done with the part.
Well, so, and also Lithgow and Goldblum, like, you could totally see those types
don't,
of...
Guys, don't. Right. Don't do that. Don't do that to Diana Wiest.
I'm sorry.
Don't do that to Goldblum. Don't do that to Lithgow. Just don't. All right? Just Mark and don't. I haven't even had a chance to show you our version. When you're about to talk about, like, who really originated the role, you haven't even seen Mark and I's versions yet.
Consider my judgment reserved. Fair enough.
Mark, break a leg, all right? I support you.
You
break
too.
A leg. You're
going to
do great.
You're going to do... I believe that this was a role made for you, and I can't wait to see it.
You got this. Yeah. Can't wait to see it in a corporate setting, too, where it was meant to be.
Yeah.
Where it was meant to be seen.
It's done on... This is a show you can buy for your corporate retreats.
I'm hoping that it's not a Zoom interview, that it's in person. That way I can really kind of...
Space work.
Let my feathers really bloom and just kind of peacock out as I do. Oh, yeah. I would do like Diane Wiest, but more like Diane Wiest from Lost Boys.
Mm.
Like take that kind of take that kind of approach, more motherly,
but on Zoom. But on Zoom, let's not forget.
I'm gonna do like a split where I do half my face as a man and half my face as a woman, and I'm gonna do like one of these numbers. Like, I'm the lady now,
turn to the side.
And now I'm the man, and everyone's gonna be like, "Shit,
that's
good."
And Mark's on Zoom, so that's good because that's where performances really pop, you know, on Zoom.
Yeah,
yeah.
You know. Anyway, this opening scene, Goldblum and Haggerty between them. Is actually the opening scene of the play.
Shit,
but
you're starting with the opening scene? Oh my god. We have so much of this to talk about.
Don't worry, we're not going in order. We're not going in order, but we're going to start here.
Okay.
But the actual opening of the movie is actually is that opening scene, but it's not, because there's also like 6 minutes of the French restaurant staff like freaking out and non-subtitled French about whatever is happening there.
Mm-hmm.
And also we get the French Michael Berryman, who's just sitting and eating escargot.
Back of his hair is the craziest thing. Like,
what
even when
happening?
I saw this, when this was new, I was like, what is that haircut? That is...
Yeah.
And Allman is clearly taken with this guy, whoever he is.
Yeah.
You might be like, Ryan, who is he? You do the research. I don't know.
He was in like three or four movies, I think.
I didn't look it up. I just... I was broken after this.
Great research,
and that first
Ryan.
Meal he's having is not escargot.
Well, good job.
What is it, Mark?
That first meal he's having is fish, because he does a clean pull of the bones.
Yeah, poisson.
Right off that
fair
fish.
Enough. Fair enough.
Poisson.
Poisson.
C'est bon.
Je pense le thon est comme ci, comme ça. That is,
ooh.
I think the tuna is neither here nor there.
All right, everybody get out your French now. This is where you... The
4 years.
This is you've learned. This is where it comes into play.
This is our time to shine.
So, because we did talk about the play, let's get into this just a little bit, because here's what Durang says about this scene, this opening scene, because he said on his website... He said, the movie lost me when Jeff Goldblum started sucking Julie Haggerty's toes in the restaurant in the first 5 minutes. Which, to be fair, he's wrong about, because it's 6 minutes of the restaurant and Jeff Goldblum looking around for Julie Haggerty. It takes forever for them just to start the damn movie. But in any case, unpleasant, unlikely to do in a restaurant, and the action told you that they were in a fake world.
The first scene of this movie was when I realized, oh, I'm about to watch a movie about people that don't really exist.
Mm-hmm.
Like, nobody, even if you are deep into therapy, nobody talks to strangers or even familiars in that way. Like, you just, nobody talks that way to anyone. And I went, are we supposed to believe that this is like in a different dimension, a different world? How are we supposed to associate to these characters that are talking just crazy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's Mark, where you find your moment before and you lock into the character and you make it your own. Guys, his performance, I've seen it. So, you know, I've seen it.
The rehearsals you guys have been doing is extensive.
Is gorgeous. All right.
Wait till you see
what
the
film. What you lose in the film, you will gain in the Zoom. All right. He gets
People are like, oh, you got to go see this in IMAX. They're like, you got to see Mark's performance on Zoom.
Yeah. Thank you.
You got to be on Zoom to get the Zoom feeling.
Yep. When I suck on my own toes on Zoom.
Yep. I didn't want to spoil it. But yeah,
I'm not going to say it got the reaction I was expecting, but it got a reaction.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. A lot of people left the Zoom.
And if Durang thought the characters were unbelievable in a fake world, Mark makes you believe it's absolutely real because you're watching it with your own eyes on a Zoom. So.
It's happening. It's happening. It's happening. Yeah, what's funny, Mark, is that in the play version of Beyond Therapy, in 1982...
Humble Brag reminding us that he has the hard copy tabbed with the scenes with Anastasia. I'm not jealous. The therapy about it.
Tabbed for what I'm about to talk about, actually. But he has author's notes on how to do the play. And in the play, he quotes Joe Orton. And he says... He quotes Joe Orton's notes for another play. But he said, this is what I think you need to do for this play. And it says... The play is clearly not written naturalistically, but it must be directed and acted with absolute realism. No stylization, no camp, no attempt, in fact, to match the author's extravagance of dialogue with extravagance of direction, realistic playing and directing in bold letters. He said, that's how we have to do it. You have to do it completely real.
Durang said that?
Yes.
Control freak. Okay, Durang, let's use Mark's version, all right? Gonna lose your fucking shit.
You've never seen realistic toe sucking. Okay. Like Mark
so
does.
Real.
So, yeah. So, there's also parts of the play that, and it's just, I just don't think Altman gets this play. And this isn't really, it's not, this is, sorry, I'm sorry to the late Christopher Durang to say this. You'd probably hate it. But this isn't Shakespeare, you know, this is, but it's, shit. You know, it's a funny play. It is a funny play, but it's
Ryan's
not
100%
like,
going to be haunted by a Durang old
Christopher
ghost.
Durang. He's coming to haunt me. But Altman does not get it. And so I have one clip for this movie. Here it is.
You're right on time.
Yeah, I like being prompt.
You have lovely breath.
I took the subway, the express. It's a nice ride.
You were in contact like this? Were in contact?
I like the timbre of your voice. It's soft but firm.
Just like your breast.
Yes, they're soft, extended where I sleep with them.
Okay. That's how it is in the movie. I want to read you what it is in the play, the actual play, just to give you an
dramatic
idea
reading.
Of
I'm
the
ready.
Difference.
I have my keys and my purse, and I'm ready.
So we're starting from this. Yeah, be ready to go. Be ready to leave as soon as I'm done. So here's how it starts, at least this section. Bruce, you have lovely breasts. That's the first thing I notice in a woman. Prudence, thank you. Bruce, you have beautiful contact lenses. Prudence, thank you. I like the timbre of your voice, soft but firm. Bruce, thanks. I like your voice. Prudence, thank you. I love the smell of the brute you're wearing, and which goes into the next part. The point is, that's how it goes. That's not how he does it. And there's a very particular thing where he changes, do you wear contact lenses, to you have beautiful contact lenses. That is a funny line, because he's not when you're looking and lovingly and romantically at somebody and say, I love you, beautiful contact lenses. That is the comedy of it.
Yeah.
But he changes, like, do you wear contact lenses? Which is not funny.
He doesn't get it.
And you don't get it. You're not getting what is funny about this play. Mm-hmm. And if you don't get what's funny about the play, you are the wrong person to adapt it.
There's a part in that scene where they're talking about the whole bisexual thing. And she's like, oh, that makes me uncomfortable. And then he says, you know, children are inherently bisexual. And he says, you know, they took kids. If you took kids to Plato's retreat. And she goes, I think they'd be horrified. And it's a great little like section in there. And he just cut all of that out.
Yeah.
Just threw it away and was like, cut to people in therapy. And then we'll come back to the restaurant back and forth.
He breaks up this opening scene, which is supposed to be us falling or getting into these characters. And he breaks them up to go to different people, including the mom, who, by the way, does not exist at all in the play. Not ever. So the mom is completely, you know, a creation of Altman. And it does not pay off. I don't know why she's there, but other than, you know, probably
it him getting to pay off.
Him working with Genevieve Page, probably. Did you have a payoff for you, Erica?
Oh my God. She was my favorite part of the whole thing.
Really?
Yes. Oh, wow. I love the theatrical mom. Yes.
Okay.
In fact, if I had my choice, I would just do the mom as a single monologue, all of her lines in my next job interview.
There's the sequel.
Just do all of them.
There you go. Thank God, finally. A legacy sequel.
Beyond Therapy 2.
Zoom sequel.
Mom.
Yeah. Mom's Revenge. Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm not trying to skip to things we hated, but I hated the therapy scenes in the way they were shot because they shoot from outside the building. Window. They have that big pan up.
Let's go there. Let's explore that, Ryan. This is important. And then it just we're having a breakthrough. Like, we're having a breakthrough. Let him go.
This is it. We gotta discuss it. And they shoot from outside the window, and literally in Jeff Goldblum's office, there's a plant by the window. So they're behind the plant, and you're watching. Yeah. Like, that does not help comedy.
No,
that is not how you shoot a comedy, and so the camera's out there. I have to think, you know, Tom Conti has done a lot of theater, much like many of the actors in here, and you just see the camera. There's just this. I'm sure some instincts kick in. You're like the audience, if you will, is literally outside the window, mm-hmm. so you start projecting because you're thinking, well, even though it's a movie and they're all going to hear you, you're mic'd up, but there's got to be some part of you that's just instinct that says, like, I got to project because the camera's way outside. We don't cut into almost ever in those therapy scenes. It's a huge mistake. You miss reactions. You miss... Mm-hmm. It's just shooting from outside. It was so frustrating because those scenes in the play are actually very funny and they're trimmed down to nothing. And on top of it, it's shot from outside of the room. Mm-hmm. Like, we're voyeurs just watching this scene happen, and it becomes weirdly uncomfortable. And it's a comedy. We're supposed to be very comfortable and laughing along with everybody.
Yeah.
It's really frustrating. Anyway, that's what I hated, but we're not even really there yet.
are we? Are you sure?
I mean, but we are kind of.
It feels naturally that we're there.
Yeah.
The other thing, too, is from that same scene.
Oh, I guess we're not. This, oh, when, sorry.
We're not there.
In the first restaurant scene, when it's the eye drops. Mm-hmm. In the play, he truly cries. Mm-hmm. And in the movie, he just puts eye drops in, and then she says, you look like you're crying.
You look like you're crying.
Deeply emotional.
I wouldn't like that. People would look at us. Don't do that. I don't think it's manly to cry. I don't think a man should cry unless his parents die.
That's sexism.
She said, I only like men should only cry like when their parents die or something. The line from the play is, I don't think men should cry unless something falls on them.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a very funny line. And just have saying, I don't think men should cry unless their parents die is like... Okay, I can see that point of view. I mean, I think that's a little tough, but certainly that is a moment a man should cry. Mm-hmm. Men should only cry when something falls on them is a funny idea. And it's just, I don't understand the disconnect.
Yeah, I think when you see my version, Ryan...
Good to see you guys. Have a great semester.
When you see my version, Ryan, with the
split... Have a great break.
Man and woman... I only cry out of one eye, so you're going to really like
hard,
it.
Hard to do.
I'm going to lose my shit. That's amazing. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's going to really like help connect you to it. So,
as someone who can't cry, I would just like to move on to the next part of the film. It's just making me uncomfortable.
So full of tears. Speaking of Tom Conti, He is actually coming off of an Academy Award nomination for 1983's Reuben Reuben.
Mm. I love that sandwich.
Yeah, it's a good sandwich.
I like, yeah, it's a double stacked Reuben.
Oh, it's two Reubens, dude.
Amazing. Yeah.
It's about a man just, you would love it, Erica. A man just eats two Reubens.
Fuck, that sounds great.
Slowly. It's like it was the mukbang of the 1980s.
Oh, I'm in.
Oh, yeah.
I'm in.
The other thing that Conti does with the part, and perhaps he thought this is a hilarious idea, the fact that he's a Scottish, he's from Scotland originally, so he probably thought, I should play this like an Italian. But again, in his notes for the play, which you could have read, he says that the character should be like, he should be very like, macho guy, like essentially is what he says about the character. Like he wants him to be, that's undercut by the fact that, you know, he, you know, has sexual problems. But that's not how he played. I guess Tom Conti said, oh, well, then he must be Italian. He's got to be an Italian guy. But that's not how he is in the play at all. So
also not macho in the least.
Mm-mm. The opposite.
Yeah. Do you think that was Tom Conti's contribution to the character? Or was that the director's suggestion?
That is a great, yeah, that's...
I know we're not final questions, but that was a question.
But fucking answer it.
I don't know. That's a great question. I don't know. It could have been an invention of Altman's that he just carried out. I don't know. But I don't know where it comes from, but he describes it in the show notes. Stewart is clearly meant to be a macho bully. That's what he says about the character.
I don't want to overshare, but my macho therapist name is Reuben Mukbang. He's great. He's really good, but he's tough. He's tough with me.
He's tough. He's tough and hungry.
Yes. He is eating all the time. Hard to understand. Really. Cheeks full of food. Meats, yeah. Bread.
If you sit in the front row, you're going to get some food on you.
Yeah.
Just
yeah.
know
but
that.
It's worth it. Mm-hmm. It's worth it.
Mm-hmm. It's so good. If they do Gallagher style, they give out ponchos, rain ponchos for everybody. First three rows. He's got so much food. That's the review. He had so much food in his mouth. Yeah. It was just all over me. Great show.
5 stars.
On the other therapist side, we have Glenda Jackson, who we will talk about again in this podcast because she appeared in The Incredible Sarah, which was released by New World Video. I know you all know the film, so I don't need to get into it. She's also a stage actress who then went on to TV and film and won 2 Academy Awards for 1969's Women in Love and A Touch of Class in 1973. But before filming this, she was actually doing a play in the West End. She was doing a play called Across the Road from the Garden of Allah, which we know as well as this.
Like the back of my hand.
Did you do a monologue from this, Dirk?
Yeah, I just cut out all of the other characters and I just read it as a monologue.
Yeah, there you go. Perfect. Yeah.
I was Glenda Jackson's character.
Wow. Good job.
No, good. She's actually, she and Stewart are actually huge parts of the play. And in the movie are not a big part of the film, I feel like. Mm-hmm. They're just inserted and then somehow they feel weirdly inserted in the end of the movie as well. Like in the end scene, which makes more sense for them to be there in the play, but in the movie you're like, why are they also along?
I mean, that's not the craziest part of the end scene of this movie, but it's certainly a contributing factor.
Yeah.
Or are we talking about things we love already?
Ooh, what is the craziest thing ahead. About this movie, Mark?
Besides the fact that you can't hear half of what people are saying, the things that they're saying are, when you do hear it, you're like, did I hear that right? Because that doesn't make any sense at all. But the craziest thing is the studio apartment that Erica pointed out, which I do agree is well decorated. They didn't do the proper measurements on how much height they had for that kitchen, so Jeff Goldblum has to crouch to get into the kitchen and through the dining room. And the dining room is lofted above their bedroom with no railing at all.
Nope.
One small step too far and you are falling right down in front of the bedroom. That was crazy.
I would put crazy a slide in.
You should put a slide in. Or at least lay a mattress down so you could have just a nice mattress fall.
Or it's the 80s, a fire pole. Fire pole would be cool.
A fire pole would be nice. Yeah. Yeah. You just put one of those square jungle gyms on the outside of it with the little entryway to the bedroom, but you could climb around, climb up to the dining room table, climb down,
and get a little
workout. And a ball pit.
I just want to eat a sandwich and go to a playground, I guess. That's what we're getting to.
Oh, gosh. We should talk about Christopher Guest as Bob. By the way, this is going back to Durang's notes. Here's how he says you should perform Bob. From auditions and one reading, I've learned that there are two major things to avoid in the playing of Bob. Avoid stereotyping. Don't let him be bitchy, gay, or effeminate. And avoid letting him play hostility to Prudence. Practically speaking, the audience will hate him if he's too mean to Prudence, because the play is set up so that the audience has almost total sympathy with her. So I feel like this movie goes against both of those things.
Certainly the former. The latter, I mean, he's not hostile as much as he is unfriendly. But as far as him being overtly gay and feminine, like they really lean into that.
Yeah,
which,
and you know, it's his warm up to Corky Sinclair. This is like him working out Corky Sinclair in real time for later on in life. But yeah, it's feels like very much. I can see why Christopher Durang saw this and was like, "Yeah, this is not what I wanted. I did not. This is
for sure
not my play. This isn't it."
I actually really like Christopher Guest in the movie.
I know, you do.
Yeah. I think he's, you know, he's got the swishy hips when he's in the running group and stuff, but it's not it's like it's the 80s. They could have been really horribly offensive with this character, and I thought Christopher Guest was really good. And he's like really pensive the whole time and visibly like upset about this woman being brought into their relationship and having dinner in their apartment, which you're just like, what a farce. But the tone of the film is what I think makes it so that it's not fun. The characters don't really get to play with the sort of dynamic of these three in a room.
If you read different write-ups about this movie, and I did a little bit of research on what people were saying about it. So this isn't me saying this, but to your point, this movie does feel like, as many people have pointed out, a movie that the actors are having a great time. And everyone on the set is having a great time. None of it translates to the final product, but you could see that shooting it, they must have thought, this is hilarious.
Yeah.
And clearly it was playing really well in the dailies, because as Julie Haggerty was saying, that they all watched the dailies. So they were like, we are making a fucking classic. And then when it's cut together, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's crazy. Let's talk really quickly about Paris standing in for New York, because I did buy this book, Altman on Altman, just for this episode.
Oof.
And they have about three paragraphs devoted to Beyond Therapy in this book, and that is about it.
It's not as hot as Ruben on Ruben, but
Ruben on Ruben.
Ruben on top of Ruben, double Ruben, amazing. So I got to read a little bit from this just because I bought this whole book for this little bit. Here's what he says, Robert Altman says about shooting in Paris. He says, Beyond Therapy was shot in Paris, though Paris was standing in for New York. And then at the end, I gave away the conceit, or else they moved the Eiffel Tower. I was offered the financing, and I said, must have been from New World. And I said, I'd rather do it there than New York. We had an office in Paris with editing facilities. He was editing The Laundromat at the time as well when he was setting this up. And that's where a lot of it was shot. I felt they'd shot pictures in New York about London, Paris, or Rome, so I thought, why not do it the other way around? Did you guys think it was New York that you were in?
No.
Oh, that's it? That's all that you...
That's all. I mean, there's some other stuff he talks about, but
you know, it did feel like it was New York, and I'm going to probably catch a lot of hate for this, because when she crosses the street, it's really dirty, and there's, like, trash in the street, and I'm like, yeah, New York. It's dirty.
I always thought it was France.
And partly the whole setup of 6 minutes of them in a French restaurant seems to be like, it's just a French restaurant. We're not shooting in France. We're just shooting in this French restaurant. And that's why we have so many French people and so many people speaking French. And Jeff Goldblum speaking French, but it's normal because it's just a French restaurant. And I'm like,
what restaurants do you just have a staircase, a dramatic staircase right in the middle of it?
Well, Erica, I think it's that time.
Oh my God, it is?
Poor Dirk has been trying to get a statement out for the last 15 minutes. We've talked over him at every turn. Go ahead.
I just
now's your time, Dirk.
Oh God. I
take this moment.
I just wanted to say that I love the idea of restaurants where you walk in and you have to speak the language of the cuisine. Because, like, that never is...
Yes.
If you're in New York and you go to a French restaurant, there's no one speaking in French. So it's amazing that they would be like, well, it's a French restaurant, so clearly everyone's speaking fluent French. Mm-hmm. No subtitles. Like,
and if you do go into a French restaurant and start speaking French to maybe potentially a French staff, they'll be like, buddy, just don't do that.
Let's hear your English, pal, because your French is trash.
They would do that in France. You come in and you start speaking. You're like, don't do that. Just
you
speak
can just
English.
Say,
we're fine.
Say omelet with cheese. You don't have to say omelet du fromage. It's not necessary, man.
Yeah, please don't ruin our language in your mouth.
Try.
All right, Erica, I think it's that time.
Hey, guys. I think it's time for someone to share things they loved and things they hated in the style of someone to watch over.
Yeah, we're going to talk about the things we loved, the things we hated about Beyond Therapy. Mark, what did you love?
Let's see. I loved... I do have something I loved.
Okay.
I loved the guy at the restaurant that is always there to observe and report. And he's ordering copious amounts of seafood and escargot. He has a giant... a giant bowl of shrimp just for himself. He's served bread for a family, but just to his table. And though it's a little, he's a little too hamming it up. Appreciate that he's always in the same spot. He's there every night. And there doesn't seem to be any rush to give him his bill. He can stay for as long as he wants.
And he probably has to race to the bathroom himself several times.
Several. Yeah. They know when he goes in, they're like, give that a few.
Just give it a few. There's no amount of matches.
Because it's a snail going in, but it's a racehorse coming out.
New shirt.
Erica. Erica, what did you love?
I love Jeff Goldblum. I mean, who doesn't?
Sure.
He's terrific. So that
you guys ever
me...
seen Jurassic Park?
Yeah. Have I? Of course I have. Haven't seen The Godfathers, but I've seen all the Jurassic Parks.
And Worlds.
Yeah, Parks and Worlds. I just loved him in it. He's just doing his Jeff Goldblum-y thing, and it's just... If you're not charmed by Jeff Goldblum, then... I don't know what to tell you. He's just so unique and just kind of authentically himself. It's just great to see that he's just been himself, you know, from early on in his career. So that's what I loved.
Interesting. I remember you saying earlier that you thought he was never not cool, though, and that was a problem. So interesting.
Well, that's why the scene didn't work for me, because they didn't allow that character to not be cool. That's why I think the comedy didn't work.
Yeah, there wasn't vulnerability ever.
Yeah, he wasn't. But that's not a ding on Jeff Goldblum. That's a ding on your alt. Okay, so maybe open up your Rob on Rob book again. See if you
Altman on Altman.
Yeah,
Altman on top of Altman. See if he's got
any pro tips in there.
He's got all the tips. Dirk, what did you love? This is your time. What did you love about
Beyond Therapy?
Tell us.
I love a lot about this movie, but for the sake of this conversation, I just want to focus on the color palette of the film, the set dressing, and the costuming, because it feels like this was filmed right next to the show Designing Women, and they were just borrowing flowy things from that cast. Like
100%.
Everything is a billowy, flowy thing. Mm-hmm. You said Goldblum did this after The Fly. He is cut. You don't see that in this. They've draped crazy patterns on him. At one point, I thought it was like, I was like, is that slices of watermelon and goldfish? I didn't know what was going on. It was like those magic eye posters where you stare long enough and you see a good movie instead of this. But, and in the scenes with the mom, she's got like the color contrasting with the wallpaper behind her. Mm-hmm. It's just like, there's really cool, like 80s tinged fashion stuff going on, so you could watch it with the sound off and probably enjoy it more for that. But those are the things that I really like the most. Outside of, like you said, Goldblum is why I was watching it. I was obsessed with him in this period of his career, and all his weird little intricate things that he does, which I wish we had the play version of this, because watching these two characters hit it back and forth would be fascinating. They're both so wild and weird. But yeah, it's a frustrating watching it again now, because I could see like what it is rather than what my like young brain thought about it when I was first getting into theater and like all that stuff. Like I still have all those feelings, but this time watching it, I was like, oh, this is a lot of someone watching over me song played too loud, and this is not cut for comedy, and this scene is too long. I know we're not into things we hated, but those were just some of the things where I was like, I see why Ryan was like, we need somebody that doesn't hate everything that's happening. I get it.
Yeah, well, thank you.
What about you,
what
Ryan?
What did I love? I like the opening sequence, the opening credit sequence, where we kind of pull out from the therapy chair, basically, and we have a lot of like lines intersecting of people talking. That was an interest. I don't know if it was 100. It was incredibly well executed. I think we could have, the dialogue could have been improved in terms of that section. But I love just that idea of therapy. We quickly move away from therapy and to restaurants and other things, and he trips over all the stuff in front of him. But I love that idea. That really did set a nice table for the movie, if you will. And then it falls apart from there. But I did like that opening shot. Maybe it's even my favorite scene. I don't know. I don't know.
Ooh, we'll find good out. Good segue, Ryan. That's your favorite scene.
No, it's not a segue. We're going to go to things we hated first. Why not?
Someone to share favorite scene.
Which we'll do in a second. Let's go to things we hated. You're right. Mark, what did you hate? What did you hate?
Things we should detest.
I've already said it, and it's just, you can hardly understand like half of what people are saying. It's the music's too loud. The audio is uneven, and it in the end, I don't know that it would have changed my opinion of the movie if I could fully understand what everyone was saying, but it annoyed me. I kept having to turn it up, and then it was too loud, and I kept turning it down, and it was frustrating.
Yeah. Yeah. Erica, what did you hate? Did you hate anything?
I hated learning that the theatrical mother is not a part of the play. I hated learning that. I wish I could unlearn that. So mostly I'm just mad at Ryan. Things I hated about this movie are Ryan's research. So
okay. She is not a part of the play, and then the one of the waiters in the restaurant who has the little ponytail, he actually has a larger role in the actual play. But they cast a French actor, so he only has a limited amount of lines in the actual play. And then they try to say, like, why are you doing an accent? Because they had to hire a French actor speaking English. So I don't know. Why even bother? really is my question. You don't just cut the character out. You've
See,
already added
I hate
in the
Ryan's
mom.
Research. The more I learn, just the angrier I am. Hate learning. I hate it.
It's tough. It's tough to learn stuff. Dirk, what did you hate, or did you hate anything?
Well, during the climax of the film,
audio boy.
At which point, there's a starter pistol that has around 4,000 bullets in it.
I know! How many?
Mm-hmm.
But the thing I don't like, and also in French, this is poulet, but in this sequence while the gun's firing, there's a chicken sound. And
yeah.
I was like, why is that? Like, I don't know. It just really pulled me out of the realism of the scene. So, yeah, mm-hmm. that was probably. Mm-hmm.
The guy tap dancing as he's walking away. Didn't take you out? But it was the chicken sound.
Well, we didn't get to favorite scene yet, but
I think I've already said what I hated. But I'll say, which was just the therapy scenes with from the outside the window. But I will say, like, Altman's really good at making a movie about a world, and so I feel like that's why his instinct was like, let's create this restaurant, which is in the play a good amount. And so he just made it about all these different people in the restaurant. But it's like, this is a play with like five characters or mm-hmm. something, you know? It's actually an intimate show. And mm-hmm. it's just not what he does. Obviously, Secret Honor, notwithstanding some of the solo stuff he did. But it's like he imposed his Altman style on top of this intimate play. And it just falls apart, you know? It just doesn't work. I guess in a way, if you love French farce, it works on that level. I don't know enough about French farce to say if it succeeds or doesn't. And if this is French farce, I'm good. But
oh, take that, French farce. Damn.
I think I'm good. I think that's a subgenre I'm going to just stay away from. Mm.
Listeners, if you agree with Ryan, then I would highly recommend watching Erica or my Zoom version, because it's a much more intimate version mm-hmm. of the intimate play. It's
very intimate. Like,
extreme intimate.
Mark sucks on his toes for an hour. And
well,
it's just nothing but
45
candles.
Minutes if 45 minutes when he only has the free version of Zoom, but yeah, I mean, just under an hour.
He's not going to get a Zoom account for this show. Are you kidding?
Yeah. It's very low budget.
They scheduled the interview for an hour, so I'm going to take up all that time.
Yeah, I mean, all the time that he can with the Zoom license that he has.
Right.
There's going to be 15 minutes of, you know, you're just going to figure something out, guys.
Space work. Maybe some mask work.
Dirk, I feel like you had a lot of Shrek stuff you didn't get to, but anyway, let's move to favorite scenes. Mark, what was your favorite scene?
I said the scene in the apartment for the potential of what it could have been.
Erica, what was your favorite scene?
When the mom does voodoo.
Yeah, it's good
when we see the mom in her apartment. And she's wearing her, like, robe and her hair is up in a towel and she's in her, like, little patio garden and she performs voodoo somehow. French voodoo on this poor woman on Prudence, who she's never met.
Yeah.
What? Why? Is it funny? I don't know. It's a little sad and creepy, but I guess supposed to be funny. Wild. Loved it.
Wild.
Favorite scene.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Dirk, your favorite scene?
I love a scene later on in the film between Tom Conti and Prudence, where he says, and this is a dated word, so I apologize to the listeners, but he says, "You're a fag hag, I have to write this down." And then he gets out a tiny book and he starts writing and she goes, "No, what are you writing down?" I think that part is one of the funniest parts in the movie, because what does it matter? Like, it doesn't matter at all that he would be writing something down, but she's suddenly so interested in the fact that he's writing, and the fact that he's like, "I have to write this down." It's just so absurd, and I feel like that's the absurdity that, like, is just completely bled out of this film from the play. And so it's just those little moments like that in the movie where you go, "Oh God, this would have been great," but no.
Could have been. Could have been.
Yeah.
I love the, you know, as I mentioned, I love that opening scene, credit scene. But I also love the ending credit scene when you get to see the Paris skyline. Beautiful. Mm. Fantastic stuff.
Aww. So you love the credits. The credits are what you loved about this movie. Huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. The beginning when you had hope and the end when you're like, thank God.
Yeah, the problem's that middle part.
Everything in between and that Reuben sandwich.
Middle part was a slog. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. Ugh. Yeah, your words, not mine. All right, let's move on to final questions.
Ew, it wasn't corned beef. It was bologna. Oh, and it wasn't sauerkraut. It was mozzarella cheese.
I'd still eat it.
Bologna and mozz. Oh, it's not
a
marble
bologna
rye.
Reuben. Dear
Somebody
God.
Put
All right.
chocolate on some white bread. This is a weird sandwich.
It's not going to sit well, but I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, I already have diarrhea, so who cares?
Final questions for Beyond Therapy. Do you think it's still possible to get that Saturn shirt that Goldblum was wearing?
Oof.
Oof.
Ooh, yeah. I hope.
I'm going to have to go to like that used store, like used clothing store in Burbank where they get a lot of stuff from the movie studios. Maybe they have stuff from Designing Women.
Yeah.
Part of that
collection. I hope Jeff still has the shirt.
I know.
I hope so.
Hope he kept it.
I hope so. Yeah. God, wear it on the red carpet, my guy. Robert Altman once said 90% of a motion picture is casting, which is interesting considering he originally wanted Carol Burnett and Alan Arkin to play the therapists.
I would have went with Delta Burke, but that's me.
Delta Burke.
In everything.
Chef's kiss.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, what would not you, wrong.
What do you think about Carol Burnett and Alan Arkin playing the therapists?
Yeah. Hell yeah. I think that would have been great.
No. Tim Conway and Delta Burke. That's what I would do.
Yep. Can't fight it. Still has a Carol Burnett connection. So, yeah. I mean, you know, close.
Yeah. Works. That way you know the costume's going to fit. So, you know.
No offense to Tom Conti and Glenda Jackson, but I do think that's... I don't know what happened there, but that would have been good.
Mm-hmm.
That would have been good.
Or Dixie Carter and Meshach Taylor. That would be another...
Ooh.
Yes. Yeah.
Annie Potts and Julia Duffy. I'm just throwing
just
out
the
some
entire
names.
Cast of Designing Women. Just mix them in. Throw them in different parts.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Annie Potts as Prudence, I don't know. I could see it.
Could have worked.
I could see it.
Yeah.
Could have definitely worked.
Did I love Book Club? Yeah, I did. Is this the time to bring it up? I don't know.
This started shooting in June, July, really late June in Paris in 1986. And many articles still had Burnett and Arkin listed in the cast. I don't know when it switched over to Glenda Jackson and Tom Conti. If it was very soon, I don't know. The budget was around $3.5 million. Was that what you learned, Mark? Because you said this wasn't a low-budget movie.
Yeah, that's what I read also.
Yeah.
But
$3.5 million, that's a good...
That's a lot.
Well, this is not the Roger Corman era, so, I mean, I would say $3.5 million is probably about right. And partly the savings that he might have had, there was actually... A article in the Cincinnati Post where the journalist went over and did an on-set visit, and he reported that Altman was using video playback, which was fairly new at the time, so he could rehearse the actors and watch it on a small video screen, which he said was something like 5 inches, and he was like, oh my God, he could watch this 5-inch screen and see it all. But and he said he used video playback in order to then rehearse the scenes and then shoot on film. So he'd use less film as a result of that. So perhaps he saved some money on that. This was released in theaters in February 27th, 1987 on 54 screens. Though they did have early in February, they did do a screening for a bunch of... therapists in New York, and in Altman says that he actually says, I screened the film to an audience of 400 psychoanalysts and they all laughed during the picture, but afterwards when they analyzed it they didn't like it so much. Hey,
classic Altman. Get them, Alt.
Yeah, worth the $15. All right. So, according to the AFI, the film took in only about $471,856 during its first 10 days of release.
Wow, they didn't even round up.
But it's only on 54 screens.
Somebody didn't even give a range. They gave the exact number. They wanted everybody to know.
Yeah, here's the exact dollar amount, and it's not a lot.
To the penny.
This didn't seem to bother Altman. He told the Associated Press in April 1987 that he wasn't too surprised by the response. He said, quote, "I don't know what most movie audiences get, and I hate to say it, but I don't care.
Get them, Alt.
This quote, not in Altman on Altman.
Moving on. That's safe for the Associated P.
I can't deal with 16-year-olds and 14-year-olds and people who have been weaned on television.
Get them.
Hoo-wee. Yeah. They go on to say in the article that the movie opened in New York and was nearly dropped entirely after the second week, and certainly gone by 4 weeks, which in those days, movies stayed in theaters for a good long while. So that was really something. But then in the same interview with Associated Press, he said that he thought the film would eventually get reevaluated. He said, quote, "I think it is romantic and funny and bizarre. It is too sophisticated for most audiences. It will eventually be seen as a much better film than it is perceived as now."
No.
And, well, it's later, Bob.
Yeah.
And I know you're no longer around to see it get appreciated, but I think you have still some time left for that to happen. And I'm sorry you're not here anymore to see it. But it only got in 54 screens, and I think that's because the real goal was likely video for New World Video. And the movie was released on New World Video in November 1987 for the low, low price of $80.
That's cheap.
$79.95.
Wow. $80.
And what was New World releasing in November of 1987? Why? Creepshow 2.
Squeal! My favorite.
Makes sense. It could be yours for $80. Creepshow 2.
Also, we would get the catalogs in my dad's store, and it would be like, one tape, $80. Two tapes, $69.95. Like the price breaks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. We'll go the more tapes you bought. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And so I always thought that was really funny because I'd be like, who needs four tapes of Beyond Therapy? Like, this is never going to be four people in here trying to fight over who gets to watch this.
Is Beyond Therapy back in? Damn it.
I should have reserved it. I should have called it.
I guess I'll get Creepshow 2 again.
Yeah. Well, there's other selections too, Mark, such as The Girl. An erotic thriller depicts a young girl's affair with a middle-aged attorney, starring Franco Nero and Christopher Lee. I hope neither of them play the young girl. $70.
Ooh, $70.
Yeah.
$70. Yeah. Man facing southeast. A man who claims to be an alien comes to a Buenos Aires psychiatric hospital bringing the other patients hope. $80. Wait.
These are New World movies. Does this mean we have to watch this?
Oh, boy, Mark. Yeah, these are New World video films.
Oh, just boy.
Cluing you in on what we had. And then one I didn't even know about. And it may be something we watch later this year. Crime Killer.
Oh, no.
A hard-nosed ex-CIA agent is given a free hand to wage war against a drug syndicate.
Oh, boy.
Starring George Panandreas. $70.
Oof.
Well, of the three, that's the one I'm looking forward to the most.
Yeah.
Well, we may be getting to it later this year. You never know. You never know, guys. You never know. I can't make any promises, but you never know. Mm-mm. Will it be as good as Beyond Therapy? Maybe we'll find out soon in just a matter of months. But until then, Dirk, thank you so much for joining us for Beyond Therapy.
Thank you so much.
Hey now, you're an all-star. It's a game I'm going to play. Hey now. You're a rock star.
Dirk, before we get to you describing your incredible show, please tell us any final thoughts about Beyond Therapy.
We covered them all.
Okay.
We're cured. We're all cured.
I'm so sorry. That made me laugh so hard I choked. All right. Well, now tell us where people can find VHS, your incredible podcast. Tell them about it, where they can find you and your show.
Okay. The podcast is wherever you listen to podcasts. I'm never going to be doing video because I only like to listen to podcasts. So do you guys do video? Do you use the video for stuff?
We're just starting to dabble.
Socials.
We're dabbling.
And
stuff. We're dabbling.
Props on the show, you know?
Just like, right.
I know. Tell me about it.
Okay, well, what am I doing? I'm backtracking already. So the podcast is coming back, brand new season, some familiar faces, some unfamiliar faces, where you'll be like, what face is that? And you'll have to guess, because like I said, it's audio only. VHS is the name of the podcast, I can tell you that part. And what else? What else could I say about it? We're not talking about Beyond Therapy. This will be the only time you can hear me talk about Beyond Therapies on this podcast.
Got it. If you wanted Dirk's thoughts, here they are.
This is
You're not going to do this on your show? I'm surprised.
I'm going to start every episode saying, this isn't about Beyond Therapy. And if you want to hear me talk about Beyond Therapy and possibly Shrek, you need to go to the New World Pictures podcast.
You're not going to find a crazy therapist and bring on your show to talk about Beyond
season
therapy?
One. This was on the list of things, but wow. I have someone who's a therapist, and then I was like, "Well, I went with Nightmare on Elm Street 3." So,
oh, yeah,
better choice.
Good call.
Yeah,
better
yeah, choice. Yeah.
And rest in peace, Chuck Russell, who just passed. Dear,
that's right.
God.
Yeah, oh. People should watch Witchboard, his last film. It was worth watching. He, you know, it had that flavor, and even though he had a smaller budget, it's still worth celebrating his last movie.
And he was a producer on Girls Just Want to Have Fun. He got some early start in New World, and they were going to remake The Blob. He ends up taking it and remaking The Blob. So, you know.
And Russell Crowe's named after him, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's not true, but could be.
Oh. Hey, he was a great filmmaker, and it is very, very sorry that he passed. Mm-hmm. So. And that
wow.
Everyone's just like, yeah. Anyway,
we're a comedy podcast as much as Beyond Therapy is a comedy movie.
So we like to get real,
both
just like comedy. So if you want to listen to Dirk's podcast, you can go find him VHS. It is separated VHS on all whatever platform you're listening to. You can also go to his website as well. And you can go to our website as well, newworldpicturespodcast.com. That's where you can find all of our episodes, interviews. We'll have an interview next week with Paul Almond, who happened to be a New World executive for this movie. And he has a long history with New World. And we're going to talk to him all about it next week. So we will have some Bob Altman stories. You bet. So tune in next week for that. You can find everything on our website, including t-shirts. Buy a t-shirt. And we'll see you next time, or you'll hear us next time on the New World Pictures Podcast, part of Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for listening. To hear more shows from the Someone's Favorite Productions Podcast Network, please select the link in the description